is the New York State AFERD podcast entitled A through Z Health and PE. We are your co-hosts, Drs. C and C, the true Pan-American connection. I am Clancy Seymour, and my tag team partner is the one and only Dr. Victor Ramsey.
Details highlighting our episodes, guests, contact information, publications, and other useful resources will always be included in the podcast show notes. For more information about New York State AFERD, please visit newyorkstateaferd.org or Facebook and social media handles at New York State AFERD. Let's embrace the journey, and now, on to our show.
Greetings, listeners. I'm Dr. Clancy Seymour, your co-host of the New York State AFERD A through Z Health and PE podcast, and hope you're all doing well. Today's show is a shared episode from the Stories from the Sidelines podcast hosted by Mr. Larry Monahan and Matt Keough locally. As an invited guest, I have the privilege to share some stories about playing and coaching hockey for Canisius College, recruiting college athletes, and helping to teach the next generation of coaches. Enjoy!
The following podcast is recorded and produced by the Podcast Precinct in affiliation with the network at bicbp-radio.com. The Podcast Precinct. Consistency, creativity, culture.
All right, welcome everybody to another exciting edition of Stories from the Sidelines. Today with me, as always, we have my co-host, Matt Keough. Matt, how are we doing today?
Fantastic.
I'm telling you, it was another great Bills weekend, a 40-0 shutout.
Yes, sir.
Not only that, but Tom Brady did win, but the Patriots lost
to
the hands of Tom Brady. So anytime the Patriots lose, the Bills win. It is a number one weekend in my books. With me today, our special guest, a man who is the president of AFERD. He has done more for the phys ed community and coaching community than I could ever hope for. Please welcome from Canisius College, Dr. Clancy Seymour.
Well, thank you for having me. What a kind introduction. I appreciate it. We're all in this journey together, and I'm humbled to be on the podcast. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Matt, for having me. Like I said, it's we're all in this together.
Happy absolutely. And can I tell you, I teach at Buffalo City, and I know we were talking about this a little bit before we got started, but the professional development that you did for Buffalo City, I believe it was back in April or May of last school year, it was top-notch. It was really not only very informative, but it got a lot of newer ideas out there. And it really just, for me personally, it looking back on that, it was really reflective and really kind of helped me. I've already implemented some of the stuff in this early school year. So I really thought it was great, not only, I'm sure, for newer teachers, but even for old veteran teachers like myself. It really kind of put a lot of things in new perspectives and gave me a different viewpoint than I didn't necessarily have. So thank you so much for coming out and doing that. That professional development.
For sure. I guess a marriage between New York State AFERD, our professional association at the state level, the Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance, and the venture with New York State Education in the revision of our New York State PE learning standards. So what we've developed is a resource that connects curriculum to those new PE learning standards. So that's what you speak to. And I'm glad that you've found that meaningful. And it's nice to see that you're using it. One quick thing I forgot to mention too is, of course, go Bills. How can I not
absolutely
be on the bandwagon too, for sure.
Now, I was going to say, I know I'm sure you've gone through the droughts. You've gone through the 90s years like I did, like I was when I was a kid. Just how much fun is it just for Bills football again? I know for me, I remember back in my days as a student, you know, we would have, especially during the Super Bowl years, I mean, our school, that first Super Bowl run literally shut down. I mean, we did nothing but Bills this, Bills that. We had a big pep rally the Friday before the Super Bowl. For me personally, as a phys ed teacher, these last, especially this year, it's been so much fun getting the kids excited. Every Friday we have Bills Day. It's wear your jersey, wear your red, white, and blue, wear whatever Bills colors you have. It's been awesome to finally get that back into the schools and just see the kids so excited about it.
I agree. You know, it's funny because whether we're talking about physical education and standards 4 and 5, I'm sure Matt is chuckling because we had a conversation in class today about that. You know, whether it's national standards 4 and 5 or New York State standards 4 and 5 and possibly 6 or you know, just the idea that, you know, when we see someone from across the street or at the grocery store and at the end of the conversation or at the end of the run-in or after you pay your grocery bill, you just say, go Bills. It's a different time. And it reminds me of the Roll Tide down in the SEC territory. And it's really fun. And, you know, I don't know if I'm going to make myself feel pretty old here, but I can speak to your experiences, Larry, myself, having been raised in a suburb of Toronto, Ontario. I'm a Canadian, proud Canuck, as you know. You can see from my apparel hanging in the background. But, you know, when I people don't realize is I was a Bills fan even prior to my journey across the border. So, you know, many people or many boys and girls who get their driver's licenses back in my time start listening to the Buffalo radio stations. And before you know it, you become hooked on the Bills. And, you know, every weekend roundup or review, and all of a sudden you listen to the chants and the respect, and the Bills make me want to shout. And all of a sudden you've been swayed and become a Buffalo Bills fan. So I've been a Bills fan for a very, very long time. And I still remember where I was for the first Super Bowl indeed. And of course the end, the tragic ending to that story itself. But nevertheless, I still remember where I was, and it's nice to be back in a competitive state again, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And don't get me wrong, that first Super Bowl loss, it still stings. It still stings.
Yes, absolutely.
we're hoping to erase those with the Super Bowl victory this year, though.
Yes,
for sure. You know, but from a coaching standpoint, because we're going to talk about that today, no other team would have come close to winning that game, given the time of possession when it came to the Giants, that game versus the Bills, 40 to 20, I think it was 40 minutes to 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Team wouldn't have been in the ball game if it wasn't, you know, that goes, it speaks to how good the Buffalo Bills were at that time.
Sure. Yeah. And it was, I mean, it was, you know, Bill Parcells, a young Bill Belichick on the defensive staff as a defensive coordinator. I don't think people realize just, you know, that really was the only way that the Giants were going to beat the Bills, is if they literally took the ball out of their hand, and they literally took the ball out of Kelly's hands, out of Thomas's hands. They kept that defense on the field just for such a long period of time. It was the perfect game plan. And I know as coaches, we always go into the with the perfect game plan, but they executed it to perfection. And that's what got them the Super Bowl.
Indeed.
All right, so Matt, you want to go over a little bio that you have on Dr. Seymour over there?
I got a pretty nice bio here, but
so we're gonna see if Matt. I gave Matt the homework assignment of getting a bio on you, and we're gonna see it. We're gonna see just how well Matt did on his homework assignment here.
So, I'm sure he did great.
Oh, of course. So obviously he is Canadian, as he stated. Dr. Seymour has played and coached for the Ice Griffs. So he is a hockey player. Let's go hockey, even though the Sabres are not, the best anymore.
they're a team on the rise. Hopefully on the
rise. They lost yesterday.
Preseason. It doesn't count. Preseason.
It doesn't count anyways. just like me, he's a graduate from Canisius. He got his master's and his bachelor's there. His lovely wife, which I have also met through Zoom meetings, and is also a Canisius graduate and another PE educator. So,
okay,
yeah, I got a lot of helpful tips from her and other professionals who graduated from Canisius when we did roundtables last semester.
I got to plug myself. I am also a Canisius alumni, a Canisius graduate, class of 2002. Just had to plug
that
in
there. That's great.
I did not even know that.
I have a Canisius grad. I had, in fact, one of my, I was back with the Jim Silva's days and Dr. Reed.
Yes. Yeah.
Is Dr. Reed still there?
Dr. Reed is still teaching for us. He just achieved emeritus status, which is the highest status of a faculty member in higher ed from a promotion standpoint, and the fact that you probably move into the retirement phase of your career. So he's been granted emeritus status, which is a very wonderful distinction and well-earned.
I'm going to say well-earned. I'm not going to lie. I've never seen, and I say this in the best possible way, I've never seen a teacher use as much energy as he does in his class. I mean, I remember taking a coaching philosophy course with him, and he's, to get his point across, there's been times he's literally bouncing off the walls. Yes. I mean, he brings the energy every time, and he might be my all time favorite teacher at
Indeed.
In college.
There's no one that can tell a story like Dr. Reed.
Oh, I could sit and
provide vivid detail and direction.
In fact, if he doesn't already, if there's somebody that should have a podcast, it's Dr. Reed.
Oh my God. He's fantastic. Indeed. Certainly. I think we're all disciples of him as well. Now, funny you should mention that. I believe the college has taken out an insurance plan for making sure he doesn't break drywall or things like that.
I was going to say, I don't know if he broke drywall. I'm pretty sure at one point he put a dent in it. So I don't know if he broke it, but he definitely dented it.
Yes.
So yeah, I love Dr. Reed. Great, great guy. I'm glad to hear that he's still teaching there.
Yes. Dr. Silvis, I still talk to a little bit too, and he's doing well. He's down retired in the Delaware region now and doing very
good.
Well. So I will make sure I say hello on your behalf. I didn't realize that you were a graduate of the Canisius Pete program. How exciting.
Oh, absolutely. Loved it. Yeah, loved it. Yeah. And then Dr. Silvis, of course, was the badminton expert.
Yes. He could beat you with his non-dominant hand too.
I got a chance to play badminton. He always has the class tournament, or he had the class tournament, and whoever won it or the top four he'd play against. I got a chance to play against him. He made me run ragged over that course, and I don't think he took more than maybe five steps the entire match. I mean, he was just drop shots, this shot, that shot. By the time the game was over, I was dripping in sweat. I don't think he moved again more than five steps the entire
time. Phenomenal athlete. He was known as Dr. Junkball Silvis, I believe. He was a pitcher too. And
I didn't realize he was a pitcher.
Yeah. And at one point he might have been one of the best racquetball players in the Northeast United States.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I know he was big in racquetball, badminton. He was phenomenal. Another very knowledgeable teacher that I was lucky to gain a lot of knowledge and a lot of wisdom from.
No question about it.
All right. So let's get into a little bit of your playing days. Now, you said, I know you played hockey, both played and coached hockey at Canisius. How did you hear of Canisius? Like, was it just through recruiting of hockey? Did you always have an idea before the recruiting process? What brought you to Canisius?
So good question, Larry. I, being a young Canadian boy, many of us are born with sticks in our hands and skates on our feet. And hockey was one of the sports that I played. And I knew from a fairly young age, probably 11, 12, 13, that I wanted to try to go as far as I could in the sport of hockey. I loved it. I adored the sport. And it didn't take me long, just because of, maybe we'll talk about this later today, clinics and academies. I started to learn of the option to potentially get a scholarship to play hockey. So, you were reminded, I'm sure you can speak to the same thing, Larry. Matt's probably being told this all the time from parents about how important your education is. And the idea and the appeal to go down south of the border and potentially play a sport that you love and use that sport to help pay for your education certainly was appealing. And it wasn't even as popular as it is now from a hockey context. It seems it's at an all-time high right now, the sport of hockey, for sure. So I learned at a young age about the option of going down south and trying to quote LeBron James, take my talents down in that area. So So that's what, you know, that was what my long-term goal aspiration was to try to get that scholarship. So, you know, I continued to progress. I played some other sports, but the long range plan for me was always try to use hockey to help get down south to potentially acquire my education at the same time. So that's kind of what I did. And, you know, I played, that got me to junior hockey in Canada and Ontario. For our listeners and for you, I'm sure most of you have heard that, you know, we always talk about in this part of the world, the Western world, the sports industrial complex and how big sport is in this part of the world. Well, junior hockey is probably one of the premier, I guess, vehicles for hockey or for people to move and ascend through the hockey ranks. And so junior hockey was the way to go. And so I played junior hockey, and I worked hard at that and played my few years of junior hockey and tried to get that scholarship. I, you know, visited some schools, started to get recruited, that kind of thing. And it wasn't until my 19, 20 year old year. So my last year of junior, so I had to take an additional year or two to get down here. And it wasn't until my last year that Canisius came a knocking, and a few other programs as well. And an interesting story was that Canisius was a fit for me for a lot of reasons. And I was already going to university. I was my dad, you know, indicated to me that once I graduated high school, there isn't going to be any freebies. If you want to, you know, if you want to keep going and play hockey, then you've got to go to school too. So that's what I did. I was attending university in Ontario, McMaster University, which is in the Hamilton area, a very good school in the Hamilton area. But I'm not so sure if I was a very good student at the time, nevertheless, because I was really focused on hockey. But interestingly enough, as I mentioned, I played a lot of other sports, and rugby was a sport that I loved, and I still play even now at this age, once or twice a year or something like that, in an old timers game. And interestingly enough, that Canisius, at 1992 had won the state championships in rugby in New York State. And at the same time, McMaster University had won the OUAA championships back then. Now it's called, I believe, CIS, but back then it's Ontario University Athletic Association Championships. And so the rugby coach from Canisius called the rugby coach from McMaster and challenged them to a game. And at that point, I was going to McMaster playing hockey, but also had, you know, loved the sport of rugby. And then I heard about Canisius from the Division I standpoint of hockey. And I went to see the rugby game. And I said to myself, geez, not only could I go to Canisius and become a physical education major and learn about teaching and being, a future professional in this wonderful profession that we're in now, but I could play hockey there. And who knows, if I'm really lucky, maybe I can be a dual sport athlete and play rugby. So that put Canisius kind of on its own little pedestal for me to potentially aspire to. And that's kind of how it happened. It's a very unique story, because while hockey certainly drove my ambition, the sport of rugby being added to the equation really sealed the deal for me, for Canisius.
Beautiful. I love it. And I found a lot of times too, even just talking to athletes, it's not necessarily going to the best team, the best program. It's going to the best fit. It's going to the best fit for the athlete. I know a couple friends I've had where they've had a couple offers for D1 schools in certain sports, but they ended up going either D2 or D3 just because the college, the environment, the choice of majors was just a better fit academically and overall for them. And I know a lot of friends, you know, you always get, wow, you had a D1 offer. Why didn't you take D1? Why didn't you take D1? Well, if I would have gone to the D1 school, it wasn't going to be what I needed academically, or it wasn't just that right fit. So I think that's what a lot of people realize too. It's not only, you know, the right fit, for them program wise, but it's also the right fit academically wise, campus wise. There's a lot that goes into really choosing which team and which sport or which college you want to go to.
Absolutely. And you know, you say it really well. I mean, there's Division II programs. Division II has kind of dwindled in size as it once was, but Division III is certainly bigger than ever. And there are phenomenal programs at all levels, whether it's Division I, II, or III. And in some cases, those Division II and III programs would do well against some Division I programs.
So oh, for sure.
I think you speak quite eloquently on the idea that a fit on all sides of the equation are really important. And in my case, you're right. Some other programs that I was certainly looking at, Canisius was a much smaller Division I independent program back then. So we weren't even in a Division I conference back then. We were a Division I independent for hockey. So we were smaller. We didn't have quite the resources, for example, that we have now. But, you know, you add in the physical education major, again, the opportunity to think about the sport of rugby as well. It all of a sudden became the perfect fit for me.
Absolutely. Now, I know you coached at Canisius. How far after was it from your playing days did you get into your coaching days? Was it a transition a couple years out? Was it next season? How long did you make that transition from player to coach?
So I finished playing around 1996, playing at Canisius. And, you know, and like many of the Canisius graduates, probably more so now than back when I played, now many of the players have a lot of really dynamic professional opportunities. When I was playing, again, we were a smaller program, so only a few of us maybe had a serious chance to potentially go play pro. And at that point, pro would have been probably, you know, semi-pro, East Coast Hockey League or down, very rare American Hockey League or International Hockey League, and even very rare playing in Europe, maybe in some of the lower divisions. But so the opportunities for playing pro hockey for us at that point, while they were there, they're certainly not what they are now, because the program is just so much better now, for sure. And those athletes are fantastic. So for me, I finished in 96, and I, you know, I had to consider, do I want to give this, you know, do I want a kick at the can to see if I can try to play pro for a couple of years, but knowing that probably it wasn't going to materialize into anything other than, you know, just an experience. Or for me, I got very fortunate again to be in the right place at the right time. I was offered a graduate assistantship in 1997 to complete my master's degree at Canisius. And that's kind of what happened for me, is I got a chance to work for the dean back then, Dr. Jim McDonald, who I'm still obviously close with, because, you know, we always remember the people that that we stand on in terms of their shoulders, for sure. And so I got a chance to work for him as a graduate assistant and get my master's degree. So to answer your question, I didn't really decided not to kind of hang up the skates at that time, the proverbial skates. And I still played rugby a little bit, but not at the college level. I started getting into men's rugby, and then obviously the old all roads lead to beer league hockey, of course. And then,
of course.
For me, what I was concerned a little bit, because at that point now I'm doing my master's degree, and, you know, at that point, Coach Kavanaugh was the coach of the hockey program. And we certainly kept in touch at, you know, another, again, near and dear mentor to me. It was discussed on more than one occasion, you know, should I come back and help him coach? And I was at that point, having been through the program myself and seeing some of the younger assistant coaches that go through, I was a little weary of trying to come in and coach potentially student athletes that in some cases I played with. So I wanted to take a couple of years off. So obviously still an Ice Griffs number one fan, for sure. I went to a lot of games, that kind of thing. Always blue and gold through and through, but I took a couple of years off and I concentrated on getting my master's degree. And then fortunate to continue working in higher ed and doing some different things on the side when it comes to PE and coaching. And then in 2001, so you see that kind of break in between is when I got a promotion to working in athletics for Canisius. And then that led to my opportunity to become the first full-time assistant coach for the hockey program back then in 2001. So just to show you how how small we once were and where we are now, where they have three full-time assistant coaches and all that fun stuff. So that was how I played that particular phase of my.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, how important do you think it was to start off as an assistant coach? I know some coaches have started off right as the head. Others work their way up. Like myself, soccer is my big sport. I know I started off through the ranks. I've done as low as modified. I've done as high as varsity and everywhere in between. For me, I thought it was important to start off at a lower level. Not that I didn't think I can handle it, but it just, for me, it kind of got my feet wet a little bit where I was doing just, I think my first coaching, I guess it was wasn't really a job, but it was just doing lower level travel soccer. And then I ended up, my first paying job was ended up being a varsity coach over at the Park School of Buffalo. And then I ended up doing some modified, some JV back to the varsity level. For me, I thought it gave me a good knowledge of just every single level. I thought having that background, even to this day, has really helped me. For you, did you find it important gaining a lot of experience as an assistant coach? Or would you have preferred, hey, I can do this in my sleep. Let me just get right to the head coaching job.
I think you've captured it well, Larry. I mean, it depends on the situation. I think at the younger levels, you can certainly jump in and probably be a head coach. But even then, if you watch experienced youth head coaches, they have intricacies, nuances. They have details that you don't always think about when you're first heading into the profession. But I mean, of course, there's many different forks in the road. We can go in a lot of different directions for sure. I'm certainly blessed for my opportunity as an assistant coach. And I agree with you. I think I learned a tremendous amount and still to this day, like you said, lessons I'll never forget.
Oh, absolutely. I know for me, and you can talk about this a little bit too. What was it like even just as your first practice as a coach? Did you kind of feel yourself? I know for me, I felt even just that day before, those days leading up to that first practice, thinking back to some practices I had as a player, all right, this will work, this won't work. What were some of your experience even just heading into that first practice as a coach? Was it, oh my God, I'm finally doing this? Was it, were there any doubts? What was that first experience going into in that first practice and even into that first season?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's funny you asked that. I wasn't expecting it, but I have vivid memories. I assume you're asking from whether it's the assistant coach or the head coach in perspective. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yes. Either or, yeah. Yes.
So I've had an opportunity, much like Matt, to do some coaching even prior to my stint working with the Ice Griffs. You know, I coached a little bit of youth hockey and youth rugby and soccer and some of those sports, even golf a little bit, and football. And so I've had a little bit of experience, but when it became time to work with Canisius hockey, now we're talking about a more regimented program, practicing every day, that type of thing. So in answer to your question, I still remember the first few practices, and I used to think to myself, okay, well, I'm thinking back to when I played and when I was at practice. Oh, this is great. I get to play with the players. I get to jump into some drills. I get to do some different things, maybe scrimmage with them, bust their chops a little bit, try to befriend them, be that buffer between the head coach. And it didn't take too long to realize from Coach Kavanaugh that, hey, come on over here. What are you doing? You're not playing anymore. You're coaching. Get out there and coach. We're not interested in you becoming a better hockey player anymore. We're interested in them becoming a better hockey player. What are you doing to make them better? What are you doing to make you better? And so I learned pretty quickly that when you become the coach, it's not about playing anymore. It's about what can you do to enrich and make the experiences of your athletes meaningful.
Oh, absolutely. You got to take off those skates and put on that coaching hat.
Yes.
So it's definitely, and I was kind of the same way. I know even my first couple practices, I do the drills with the kids or show them or this and that. And it's fun, but at the same time, you're looking like, all right, You've got to coach them. You're not here to play with them. You're not playing in the game next week. They are. You've got to get them ready. So it's funny that you brought that up.
Well, you know, Larry, the other thing that it's funny too is, you know, when we stop playing the sports that we love to play at a higher level, or we start to ascend to adulthood. We start thinking about, okay, we're not getting as much physical activity as we might have when we were younger. We don't have the same metabolism. So when, again, I think back, that's a really great question you asked. I think back to those first, you know, that first year or two where I was thinking to myself, okay, you know, I'm not running as much, as I'm not getting as much activity. I'm starting to put on a few pounds, you know, so every practice, I'm on the ice every day. So every practice, I'm going to do the skating drills with the players at the end or something like that. And again, it didn't take long for me to be wisened up, so to speak, by my head coach to say, again, this isn't about you. This is about the team. This is about the players. So I think it speaks to that for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And I know for me, I still, especially early on, I would do for soccer, we did, and I'm sure you did it for hockey too. We would do the wind sprints, the endurance. Yeah. I'd sit there. I'd always do it with my kids, because then I figured, hey, they can't complain. You know, coach is doing it right along with us.
Right.
I mean, I know the older and older and older and older I got, I kind of looked like, okay, maybe it's only going to be one wind sprint instead of five. Maybe it's
right.
Well, coach, how come you're not doing with us? Because coach needs to watch you guys do the wind sprints.
Right. But you know, that's a good point. I don't want to diminish that either, that I think there is a certain sense of capital that you have to certainly apply as a coach, that,
oh, for sure,
there is fitness going on. You're buying in and showing them that you're committed to. But I just getting back to your original question, when you put the coaching hat on, it's the coaching hat. It's not the player's hat anymore.
No, absolutely. Matt, what do you got for us next? We're going to switch topics over to you.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious now. So we're talking about coaching and stuff. What was it like experiencing the whole, so you kind of went through the quote unquote recruiting process yourself as a player. What was it like on the coaching side now? Was it like, how was that transition between player mindset to coaching mindset?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, even in that time, things had changed. When I was recruited at Canisius, we were Division I independent. We were a smaller program. We didn't have the resources that we had even when I came in. When I came in as a coach, we were now a part of a Division I conference. We competed. So the winner of our Division I conference was an automatic bid to the national championships. That never happened when I played. Things were a little bit more high stakes when I was recruiting back to when the time when I was being recruited. You got to remember that when Canisius, at the time that I was a student athlete, we were Division I independent. So we had a mix of Division I and Division III competition and games. There wasn't limits back then to scholarships because we were independent and we didn't compete for a national championship. Right. So comparatively to when I became the part of the coaching staff, and now we're part of a Division I conference, you have to, just like you see in the NFL or the NBA or the NHL with salary caps, the same thing applies to college hockey. There are caps and limits to scholarships that you have to watch and be close and mindful of. And so when you make when you were making a mistake back in my time as an athlete, I think the mistake wasn't as crucial or pivotal as it began to be when I started to join the coaching ranks at Canisius, and even more so now.
I mean, so where are you pointing at me, Larry?
I don't know. I just felt like pointing at you.
I was like, what are you trying to tell me? So describe your process, how you went about recruiting. So I'm kind of curious about that. I know absolutely nothing about the recruiting process at all, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, for me, I did a lot of recruitment in the Ontario region and Toronto region because, again, junior hockey was big. Towards the end of my coaching stint at Canisius, I started to cast a larger net and start getting into some of the junior leagues in the United States, which have become more and more fruitful and probably much better than ever before. And so much so that I wonder if the junior hockey leagues, and some of them in Ontario and some other regions in Canada, are not quite as where they were. Junior hockey in Canada is still very competitive out west, British Columbia and Alberta. That region is fantastic. But back to your question, what I learned or what I tried to apply to recruiting is what, in some cases, is what I was socialized to. So if you recall in today's class, we talked about socialization, Matt. Yep. We talked about, our previous experience, our acculturation, our recruitment itself. And so when I was going through this process as a student athlete, I remember speaking to coaches, maybe playing a game and then speaking to a coach afterwards and excited about the opportunity to go to, hockey university or hockey college. But then later finding out that that program went in a different direction or something like that. So what I always tried to do from a recruitment standpoint is remember that I was once on the other side of it. So when I started to become, interested in student athletes to a point where I said, I can see this as student athlete being a nice fit for the Canisius Ice Griffs. I would start with saying, okay, I would call the student athlete. I would maybe meet them after a game, talk to them. And I would start, having communications with them, but then continued communications. And I would say to them, and I still remember that I said, we don't have the resources of some of the bigger Division I programs, not just yet, but we're trying to. So what we can't make up with some of the recruiting advantages they have, I'll make up with my genuine concern and consistency and contact with you and keeping you in the loop throughout the entire process. And that's kind of the way I always approached it.
And how important do you think that is, especially just for an athlete, even dealing with them and getting the families involved, like getting, getting the support of mom and dad, or almost, it's almost like you're not only recruiting the athlete, but you're also recruiting the family a little bit.
Absolutely. You get to know the parents, potentially even siblings a little bit. There are restrictions on when you can call and that kind of thing. But people, the family gets to know you when you're, again, and from my vantage point, and Matt asked a great question. What I did is I was committed to being a consistent voice from Canisius College Hockey that would, if I was interested, if the program was interested, if we felt the athlete was a right fit, then it was my duty to make sure that I showed interest, not just intermittently, but consistently throughout the recruiting process. So yeah, you get to know the family, they get to trust you. I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to, is trust. Are we just trying to recruit as many student athletes as possible without any care or consideration for what that student athlete brings to the table or what may happen to them once they enroll as a freshman on campus? So that was important to me. I wanted to earn the trust of families. And so that's the way I always looked at it, for sure.
Absolutely. And especially with parents, I mean, they're literally entrusting you with the care of their son or daughter. It's going to be they're entrusting you with 4 years of their son or daughter's, their athlete's trust, their athlete's well-being. They want to know that I'm sure they want to know that you're not in there, like you said, just for their athlete to make just for their son or daughter to make your team better. They also want to know that you're going to make their son or daughter a better person, a better athlete, a better academic.
Graduate.
Yeah,
graduate, right? Exactly. Have something waiting for them. And at the end of whenever the end of their pro career is, whatever that might be.
And I was also going to say that I think part of that is demonstrating what your coaching philosophy is and just what your purpose is, like your personal purpose as a coach is, and it's different for every coach. And I know taking your coaching class right now, we are in the process of developing our coaching portfolio. One of them is to develop a coaching philosophy. Therefore, I also interviewed Larry right here for my coach interview.
He did indeed. And let me tell you, it was a great interview. He asked a lot of good questions.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I'm not surprised. Again, Matt is a go-getter, and I see him as a difference maker moving forward in the profession, whether it's physical education or coaching or both, for sure.
Absolutely. Matt, I'm going to put you on the spot here for a quick second.
Yeah.
Have you thought about what your coaching philosophy is going to be? Have you thought about what type of what type of coach you're going to get into. I know you said you just started coaching gymnastics, correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's your coaching philosophy looking like?
So it's a rough start just because, like you said, I started, but I think that my main purpose is for my athletes to be successful in life. I want to teach them obviously skills and my information of the sport that they're doing, but I also want to kind of show them how, and I think this is the phys ed teacher coming out of me, is like, I want to show them how to better their life outside of the sport as well.
Okay.
So gymnastics is a very kind of independent team sport, meaning like you're on a team, but you do everything independently. Like you get scored independently. You do your event independently. So a lot of that is you're teaching them, oh, how, this is what you got to do for your success, but also I want you to do this for your team success and building that team bonding. So there's different factors there. And then also I just want to promote, you know, a good vibe for them to go off and be like, all right, well, this is gymnastics time, but like, what are you doing outside of gymnastics? Like how's school going? You know, just different, promoting a better well-being for them overall.
It's a little bit of a well-rounded athlete.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it.
Beautiful.
Indeed.
And what would you say, Dr. Seymour, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges facing a new coach? I know some of the coaching courses at Canisius. I know you deal with phys ed teachers a lot, obviously. What are some of the newer or even bigger challenges that you see just as that young coaches have to deal with?
Well, I mean, I think I would be remiss if I didn't jump on the bandwagon with many other coaches who lament, juggling some of the egos that might be involved in coaching. And what I mean, unfortunately, by egos is in many cases, parents and organizations that maybe have their hands in or might not have the best interest of the student athletes. Or better yet, as you know, kind of Matt has alluded to, the maybe from a more organic or holistic standpoint, the sport at hand. I think that's certainly a problem. When you think about challenges, you have to think about it from different vantage points. If we're talking about youth sport or perhaps high school or all parts in between sport. You know, you've got to juggle parents, you've got to juggle administration and liability and all those types of things. But when you're looking at it from other angles, you have to think about all the different, and I'm sure Matt maybe remembers this analogy that I use a lot, there were many occasions when I was coaching at Canisius that I didn't have a chance to think about winning the game until I was on the bench listening to the national anthem because of all the other things that you have to consider, playbooks and, uniforms and paying referees and hotels and team meals and all those things, then finally, when it comes time to game time and the whistle blows, you can say to yourself, okay, what can I do now to try to win this game? So perspective is critical when it comes to what a new coach has to face. I think it differs based on level for sure as well. No question about it.
Oh, absolutely. And I know one biggest thing that I had to learn is just how much of a time commitment it is. I mean, a lot of times, especially as a player, sometimes you think, oh, the coach just comes up with the practice, goes to the game, and that's it. But it's not the case, especially like you said, the higher the level you are, the more time you have to put in where you're on a high school level, you're making sure every kid's got their physical in. You're making sure that every kid is staying academically eligible. You're mm-hmm. making sure that you're dealing with parents and keeping the parents happy. Yes, you are setting up practices, but you're also scheduling your non-league games against other teams. You're checking out what this team's doing. You're setting up games. You're setting up your film. You're making sure the field and yes. everything is set up. I mean, I know I've been, especially early on, I've been the guy that had to chalk the field. I've been the guy that's had to set up the nets. I mean, it is, you got to get the busing schedule in. It's a lot more time consuming that people realize. So yeah, it's just,
absolutely. Well said.
Yeah. And I think it's something that you really don't realize it until you're in that season, until you're doing it. I know I for sure didn't.
Agreed. Absolutely. The time, I'm glad you brought up the, you know, I brought up some, you brought up some other ones, video. I mean, all the things that you have to do. I mean, if you think about some of the most successful coaches in the world, what are they known for? They're known for, like, a Bill Belichick, for being a grumpy curmudgeon. Why? Well, because he lives in his office, and that's why. Because of the time commitment that's required to be successful. And it's not going anywhere. And that's, you know, certainly you mentioned some of the challenges. That's probably what we're seeing in the coaching profession. One potential, barrier is the time commitment and what it takes to be able to make it far in the coaching profession. Indeed.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, you know, there are times where my wife knows that during soccer season, you know, we plan our vacations not during the fall. We've got to plan our vacations during the winter. Or I coach indoor track and outdoor track as well. So she knows where it's sectional time. We're not taking a trip that time. She also knows, okay, there's a little bit of a leap with a little bit of a window between soccer season and track and field season. So we can plan maybe a weekend getaway there. And I know for me, it's, I can't tell you how, happy and how lucky I am to have a partner like her, where she's just, she's very understanding. Let's put it this way. Very understanding of my coaching situation. And it's one thing where she's even had friends, ask her before, where she said, well, don't you get annoyed when Larry's away on this weekend, or he's got a tournament here or a tournament there? And she's like, no, she's like, I knew his job when we first started dating. And she knows it and she gets it. And I think a lot of times, young coaches might have a little bit of a trouble navigating even just relationships, because it can be tough for sure.
Balance, indeed, right. And oftentimes the best coaches, and for that matter, teachers as well, are successful because they have that balance, but they also have that support network to be able to lean on. And in your case, a wonderful partner that understands what she signed up for when it comes to being a companion for you for the journey, right? And you know, another thing that I wanted to bring up too, when it comes to its challenges for beginning coaches to consider is the whole, again, back to that conversation that I had with Matt today about socialization and how we become interested and recruited for the profession itself. And there are many times that there are mixed aspirations or mixed perspectives when it comes to coaches. Are they entering the PE teaching profession because they want to be the coach, or conversely the opposite, or vice versa? Coaching is not teaching. Teaching is not coaching. They're very much interrelated, but they're different. They're different goals. Matt talks about philosophy. There's a different goal when it comes to physical education versus coaching in athletics. And we have to certainly remember that. And I think beginning coaches sometimes forget about that.
Oh, absolutely. And very, very well said. I'm glad you brought that up, because it very much is, there's a marriage between coaching and phys ed, but they are two different things. And I think I like you said, sometimes coaches and teachers kind of don't realize that they've got to blend and work together, but they also need to be a little bit, you know, different as well. So now we're going to get in, Matt, what do you think? We'll get into the coach's hot seat here. We'll put, put Dr. Seymour on the hot seat.
Yeah, but you stole one of my questions, so I only have two instead of three.
I stole one of your questions. Matt took a peek of my thing. So his questions won't be a a bit of a surprise.
Okay.
But Matt, we'll have you go with your question number one. That'll give you some time to think of a third one.
My question number one, this one's just really kind of random, but what's your favorite movie snack?
Ooh. Movie snack?
Yeah.
That's an interesting one.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, I really enjoy, I guess setting aside the pandemic, it hasn't been an endeavor that we've had a chance to do as much as we would have liked since the pandemic. But one of my favorite things to do is go to the drive-in with my family. I have four beautiful children. And my wife, as Larry mentioned and Matt mentioned, is also a physical educator at Buffalo Public Schools. So both of you are in the same school district as well. And so we, nevertheless, I enjoy going to the drive-in. And one of the things we do with the drive-in, there's a drive-in out in Lockport, out on Transit Road. And we order a pizza from one of the fantastic pizza shops out that way called Sonny's. And we bring in the pizza. And we also make sure we stock up on some beverages peanut butter cups and M&Ms and that kind of thing. Ooh. So I guess a smorgasbord of stuffing myself in front of a drive-in with my family and kids is probably one of my favorite movie snacks. I hope that answers your question, Matt.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I love it. For me, I'm a big Raisinette guy. I'm gonna go with Raisinettes.
Oh yeah, we had them too. How can I forget the Raisinettes?
I love the Raisinettes. I know it's funny, when I watch a movie, I'm not a big popcorn person. I'm not a big popcorn person.
Me neither. I'm not a chips guy or popcorn guy. I'll much rather take something chocolate for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So
I knew chocolate was going to get into this. Everybody who knows me has a wicked sweet tooth. So
I'm telling you, chocolate does it for me every time. Every time.
For sure. For sure.
All right. So my question is, my first one is favorite. Now we're talking about sports or movies here. Let's keep it going. Favorite sports movie of all time. Your favorite sports movie.
Oh, you know, there's so many good ones. You know, a couple that, recent that I've really enjoyed, Glory Road.
Okay.
Yeah. An excellent movie that makes, you know, that has a wonderful story behind it, but it's a much more deeper story about, thinking about some of the social political constraints that we face even today, still today. So there's a lot of deeper meaning to that movie for sure. And it's a great message. So that's certainly one. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Hoosiers, another movie that I really enjoy.
I was going to say that was going to be my choice.
it's no surprise. And it's no coincidence. It's not certainly intended that two movies I just mentioned are basketball. It just happens to be the case that's the situation. But I love Gene Hackman and a great movie. And again, another great message. Certainly lessons from that movie that many, many coaches still use to this day, whether it's the taking the small basketball courting and putting it into the big stadium and all those types of things and making sure that everybody is a part of the same team and that no one's bigger than the team. I think that movie really has some wonderful messages as well. So those are two for sure that I enjoy.
Absolutely. And it's funny that you say Hoosiers, because I actually did that. I was a JV basketball coach. So since you're the JV coach, you're the assistant for the varsity team. And we had it was our first second sectional game, and we got to play at Buff State. And of course, I did the whole, all right, measure the basketball.
Yes.
And after, you know, I gave the speech or whatever, one of my kids looks at me. He's like, wasn't that from a movie? I was like, no, I just thought of it now.
That's great. That's great. I love it. I love it. And there's lots of other fantastic sports movies for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
They come to mind.
Absolutely. Matt, what about you? Favorite sports movie of all time?
Remember the Titans. I love
football. Yeah. Excellent one. Denzel Washington. Oh, another great story.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's too, I think, you know, if it, that's part of what makes it not only a great movie, but a great sports movie where, you know, you tie in sports with politics, you tie in sports with stuff that's happening in the country, in the world. And it's just great. Remember the Titans is another favorite of mine. I'm going to go with McFarlane for mine. The Disney movie about running, the cross country team, new coach who kind of brought the cross country world under McFarlane.
I don't think I've seen that one.
It's great. It's actually a true story. Jim White was the gentleman's name who coached. He started literally, it was, he had moved to a, very, poorer district in New Mexico and, in California. And just really started a cross country program, turned the school around. And I think they ended up winning in the late 90s. I think they ended up winning like 5 or 6 state championships in lacrosse right in a row. Great movie. And of course, another Disney movie.
Add that to my list for sure. Disney.
Oh, absolutely. Disney movie. All right. So, Matt, what do you got for your next hot seat question?
I'm going to steal yours that I rightfully claimed as mine. It's kind of different. But what would be like, what's your favorite superhero?
All right. So you're going to make me come up with another one after this. All right. My question was, if you could pick a superhero, which would it be? But Matt's going to steal it from me again.
Favorite superhero.
I was going to say, Matt, do you have an answer? Matt, do you at least have an answer to your question here?
Of course. It's Batman.
Oh, you were just going to say mine is Batman, but the Christian Bale Batman. In the Christopher Nolan movies. That's the Batman that I like.
See, now here's a question. Is Batman really a superhero? Because he doesn't have any particular superhuman strength or superhuman ability. He just has a lot of cool gadgets.
Well, he's kind of like a detective.
Yes.
He's like a master detective.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I mean, I think when I was younger, I would root for some of the, for some of the superheroes we all think of, Superman or some of these other, certainly metahumans, to quote Flash or something like that, right? These extraordinary examples of superheroes. But I think speaking to that, like Matt said, a detective, and if, another thing I've learned over the years is that, sport is a wonderful vehicle to expand upon your career. And, but we still need our minds. And we still need our bodies to work in unison. Right. And Batman is an example of a very wealthy person that has a lot of the trinkets to be able to do some of these great and wonderful things to save humanity. But he also has a beautiful mind, too.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. All right, Matt. So since you stole my question, why don't you go with your third question? What do you got there?
Okay. What's like your fate or your sport icon, your biggest sport icon or person that you looked up to?
Good question. For me, I know for me, I'm going to say Pele. I think I've mentioned this before. I'm a big soccer person. That's my sport, but just not only what he did on the field and not only, was just a tremendous, I still say one of the best players ever, but just the stuff that he did off the field, the political ambassador that he was, the tremendous sports ambassador, what he did for Brazil and other countries less fortunate. He was just, for me, he was a global icon. He was in every sense of the word, on, off the field, everything that he did for me, especially as a youngster growing up in the sport. He was really a person I admired both on and off the field. So for me, it's Pele.
That's a good one. Incidentally, is it the movie Victory with Pele?
Yes.
Yeah.
Victory that came out in the early 80s. And I saw that movie in the movies, Larry. So that's how old I am comparatively to you. As I was a young soccer player at the time. We went to see that movie when it came out in the movies in Pele. So Pele is a very good one. Hard to dispute or hard to counter that one. I have a couple that I can think of, and I do think you're spot on when it comes to what Pele not only accomplished on the field, but off the field. And certainly, there are others that have done that as well. Muhammad Ali and, was the gentleman that still the basketball player that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but there's the other basketball player whose son is now a coach, is still an activist from a social context. I can't remember his name. He played for the Lakers and the Celtics, and his son was the coach of the Lakers, and I can't remember his name at this point. It escapes me.
Was it Walton?
Yes. Walton. Yeah, he was another advocate of, you know, for not only the sport, but outside of the sport. So those are two. But, you know, I would be, you know, I've always been, and in particular with the pandemic that has passed and hopefully passed and on our way down kind of to a better spot. We had a chance to watch. I think all of us were glued to the ESPN last April or April of 2020 when we watched Michael Jordan and what he accomplished and what he did with that interesting 8-year period of winning those 6 championships and then being on hiatus for 2. You know, he was fantastic, and I think many of us forgot you know, what he did and what he meant to the game and what, and how, and just how dominant he was. So he certainly won, but, you know, back to your point, Larry, you know, did he accomplish as much off the court? I don't know. You know, that's a tough question. I think that was not his niche. I think if anything, he probably tried to stay away from that a little bit.
Boy,
yeah. I don't think it was his comfort zone. So, you know, he's won. Again, a great question. I've given you a few, but I would be very foolish if I didn't mention Wayne Gretzky.
I'm glad you said that, because I was like, how could a young Canadian hockey player not say Wayne Gretzky?
How could I not? Yeah, and I would, believe me, I wouldn't. And what he has accomplished both in the rinks around the world, but namely in Southern California and for hockey in the United States, you know, it cannot be rivaled. And then you add in what he's an ambassador for the sport. You know, his father passed last year, and he's known as the father of hockey in Canada. And you know, it just speaks to how endearing Wayne Gretzky is to the Canadian community. And for that matter, the U.S. community now too. And what he's accomplished both in the sport of hockey and outside is second to none. And again, I'm not interested in getting into battles with others about, you know, who is more dominant in the game. He was one of the best, if not the best player to ever play hockey. And I saw one of those Gatorade or those Sports Science Institute things that we see on ESPN and a long time back. And they were comparing what Wayne Gretzky accomplished in terms of his records comparatively to Jordan, and rightfully so. And I think that by the end of the conversation, it was conveyed that in order for Jordan to even come close to what Gretzky did to the record books, he would have had to triple his overall career output compared to what Wayne Gretzky did to the sport of hockey. So many people don't realize that. I mean, he annihilated the record books. He had some help, no question. But what he did just alone in that is remarkable. And then you add in the other pieces too. So.
Oh, absolutely. And then I think even just, I think he's very instrumental for growing the game in the United States. Just when he came over to LA and the prominence that he put on hockey, the appeal that he got, I think I'm no predictor or whatever, but I have a feeling just him being on that LA team just grew the sport
for sure
of hockey in the United States.
Yeah. I thank you for reminding me that's another piece is, you know, what he's done. We have Stanley Cup champions now out of Los Angeles. We have one of the best hockey players in the world, Austin Matthews. And of course I have to mention him because he's a Toronto Maple Leaf. And he grew up in Phoenix. So how can we not mention what he's done to grow the game of hockey? And to the point, and let's be honest, the two best countries in the world in hockey are Canada and the United States. Yes, Russia's still good, Sweden's still good, but perennially, when you look at the upcoming global competitions, who is circled on the map, and it's or who is circled on the schedule, excuse me, and it's Canada, the U.S., because they are truly the best. And I think you're spot on that Wayne Gretzky has a lot to do with that, growing the game in the United States.
Absolutely. And the last coach's hot seat question. Favorite home cooked meal. Now, whether it's a meal that you cook yourself, that your wife cooks, that your mom or dad has cooked, what's your favorite? Like, if you can only have one home cooked meal, what's that go-to home cooked meal?
Good question. So I'm going to put Matt on the spot and ask him first to buy me some time.
All right. So I love Italian food, and my beautiful girlfriend is really Italian. So she makes lasagna and pasta with homemade sauce, and even sometimes homemade pasta. So homemade everything, bread, meatballs, whatever you want. And so that's got to be my favorite thing in the entire world.
That's a keeper right there.
Oh, that's
a keeper.
That's excellent.
That and a bunch of Prilosec for my heartburn, but it's okay.
I guess for me right now is, you know, and I'm fortunate, again, my better half, Karen, is certainly a leader when it comes to creative plates in the kitchen, and she does a wonderful job. And oftentimes I'm actually very excited because I opened the fridge before this podcast today. As you know, I came off the ice. I opened the fridge and I saw a container full of chopped squash, and she really does some wonderful creative ideas with squash, and whether it's adding a chicken to it or another meat. Ooh. And then she throws in olive oil or some sort of vinaigrette. It's fantastic, and I really enjoy it, and so much so that my kids are connoisseurs and eat food as a result of Karen, because of some of the creative dishes that she develops. So I would go with that. And I often say to my kids, you know how much I like squash when I was a kid? I didn't like it. I couldn't eat it. I couldn't stand it. And now I love it. And it's probably because we grew up and our taste buds changed, but I never tell my kids that. But on top of it, it's because I didn't have the pleasure of having Karen dress it up so well. So probably that.
Ooh, perfect. I love it. Well, Dr. Seymour, before we go, before we wrap this up, is there anything that you would like to plug? I know you've got your podcast that you do. Is there anything else that you'd like to plug, or any upcoming projects or events that you're working on currently?
Well, thanks for mentioning the podcast, and hopefully we can put this episode on our podcast as well, where we have the New York State AFERD A through Z Health and PE podcast. And notice I said A through Z instead of A through Z, but nevertheless, it's the A through Z Health and PE podcast. And we've just got that going over the last year. I'm pretty excited about that. We generally release episodes once a month or so. So hopefully we'll be able to simulcast this episode on that podcast as well. But that's up and running, and we have some exciting episodes coming in the fall for that. So take a look at that through your various podcast apps and catchers and players from that standpoint. Brought up, and certainly appreciative of it, Larry. I'm the current president of the New York State Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. My stint as president is coming to a close in November, and I've served as president for 2 years, and I was able, I'm the first president to serve a two-year stint since, I believe, something in the 1940s, and I was able to do that peacefully and amicably with everyone supporting me. So I'm grateful for that, given the situations. And as I mentioned to, PE professionals, future professionals, and coaches, health educators, dance and recreation specialists, supporting your professional association is critical. We want, a large seat at the table, not a small seat. And what do I mean? We want, when decisions are made about our professions moving forward, we have 14,000 health and physical educators in New York State alone. And we want a table that seats all 14,000. That means join New York State AFER to make our voice 14,000 strong. It's your duty to support the association as much as the association supports you moving forward. So we want you to join. Please support us as we move forward. We've done some great things. I appreciate you having me on for today. We had a chance to kind of just scratch the surface of some stories regarding the coaching profession. A lot of fun, as I often say to my students, excellence is a journey and not a destination. I'm sure, Larry, I get the sense that you and I are of the same ilk. We like to use analogies and quotes, and that's one that I love, and it's near and dear to my heart. And the idea that we can always become better. We're all learners in this journey. And whether it's in coaching or whether it's in teaching or whether it's in any other profession, we're always learning. And as soon as you start thinking that you have the market cornered and you have things all figured out, at that point, I think it's time to hang up the proverbial skates or the proverbial boots.
I agree 100%. I know a lot of the kids that I've coached, they call them coachisms. So it's, I agree on there 100%. And thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. This was a real treat. And like I said, I agree. I think we've only scratched the surface here, and you are welcome anytime back on the podcast. Sorry, I stole Matt's thunder. Matt, would you like to welcome him back since he's your professor?
You already did it. It's okay. The moment's passed, Larry. The moment's
passed. Well, you are definitely welcome back anytime.
I would love to come back. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
we'll set it up again. Thank you so much. And thank everybody out there for listening to another exciting episode of Stories from the Sidelines. Follow us on Facebook or on Instagram. That's all we have for today. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.